All right. Another episode of Whiskey Throttle Radio. I'm your host, Kurt Lucas. Thank you guys so much for listening. We have a good one for you today. On this episode, we have privateer Tristan Lane. He's from Florida, so I had to get him on. And yeah, he talks about racing Southwick and Redbud this year and his plans for some 2019 Supercross. After that, we'll have Max Gomez on. He's a rider out of New York, and he's looking to be the first amputee to qualify for a Lucas Oil Pro Motocross National. He's a cool kid with a great story, and he's really motivated to get this done, and it's a good listen for sure. As always, make sure to head over to bloodlubricants.com to check out all the products that Blood Lubricants has to offer. And, you know, type in promo code WHISKEY for 25% off all products. I swear by this stuff. It's awesome. It's no BS. This stuff really, really makes my bike run well. As always, you can find these on iTunes or the podcast app or whatever they call it now. Stitcher, Spotify, and Google Podcasts. Like us on Facebook. Follow us on Instagram. Check out our Patreon account. And, yeah, thank you so much for listening. Showtime. Dum, da, 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 da.
This is gonna feel real good, alright?
Most dope.
Everybody please put a thumb in the air. Hey.
So much that I can't keep count. New kicks give me cushion like Whoopi. Keep a smile like an eating ball cookie. Everything good, I'm white boy awesome. Up all night, Johnny Carson. I ain't got a Benz, no, just a Honda. But try and get my money like an anaconda. Real, real long, cross the country. Smoke joints in the whip, no cap can bust me. Driving to the...
All right, on the line with me right now, from DeLand, Florida, Tristan Lane. What's up, man? How's it going?
Hey, I'm doing good. How are you?
I'm doing good, man. It's another boiling hot day here in Florida. I'm sure you understand.
Oh man, I'm telling you, it's been a brutal summer for sure. And, especially after doing some of the outdoor stuff, you realize how hot it really is.
Yeah, man, I completely agree. But hey, speaking of outdoors, jumping right in, we saw you at Southwick and Redbud. How'd those races go for you?
Yeah, not bad. You know, I'm still new to all of it, just trying to get my feet wet. Last year, actually, I did my first one. I raced Southwick, so I kind of knew that track at least. But, yeah, it went pretty decent. Southwick was a lot better for me. I qualified 14th, which I was pretty pumped about. You know, showed some good speed in practice and everything. And then in the races, just straight up, just that track was gnarly. And I just, you know, it was kind of tough for me because I felt really good, like, leading up to it. I had a really good base fitness and was riding well. And the motos, I don't know, I just, like, I did not ride like myself. And I think I ended up, shoot, I don't even remember. I think it was, like, 25th overall or something like that. But, you know, for the most part, it was a really, really good race, though, because every time you're out there, you're learning so much. And the second moto, for example, I, like, came out like top five on the start, and I didn't even know what to do with myself. It was so funny, but yeah, just trying to learn every time and being out there and getting each lap in and just staying on two wheels is so important.
Yeah, definitely. And dude, that track was gnarly. I mean, when you see Tomac and guys like that making mistakes all over the place, you know, man, it's those rollers were huge, and watching Tomac double through them and stuff like that, I couldn't imagine, you know, riding that.
Yeah. I mean, those guys are animals for sure. But, you know, it's pretty eye opening for sure. You know, I'm a Florida guy, so, sand definitely suits me well. I feel like I can ride it pretty good on any given day, but, you go out there and, you know, for example, like bike setup, I struggled quite a bit. I could ride like during the week, like I said, I felt really, really comfortable. I was doing, you know, all the motos I needed to do. My bike, you just can't really train on a track that rough. So, for me, I think it was a little bit of like shell shock. I got out there and, my, you know, speed wise, I can do all the things I need to, but you go out for a 35-minute moto and you don't feel like you're flowing and the track's just beating you up. And I sort of just tried to take the safe route and just finish. But, Yeah, I crashed every single moto actually that I did of outdoors. So I never gave myself really a fair shot, but had a lot of fun and just, you know, learning stuff. Those guys in practice, they go by you and you can kind of latch onto them and, you know, see what they're doing. And really it's not as big as you think. I learned, it's really just all the experience they have. They learn a lot of little things and going through the bumps, like you mentioned with Tomac, you know, they double through giant rollers where we're just out there getting pounded. So they're really smart when they ride, for sure.
You know, I wanted to ask, because I've heard different things, how does, like, our tracks down here in Florida compare to Southwick? I've heard Southwick's nowhere near as sandy as, you know, some tracks we have here, but then I've also heard it's way worse. So I've heard different things.
Yeah, no, that's for sure. That's a really good question, actually. My dad was, he was asking the same thing the other day. It's quite different, though, because, you know, I've heard a few of these Florida guys like Kyle Chisholm and a few of the other people that have touched on Southwick before. It's almost like it has a harder base underneath than Florida. So, like, you know, as you know, in Florida, it's just like a bottomless pit. Like, it never ends. Mm-hmm. It's just sand on sand. So at Southwick, I was a little caught off guard, because you get there and it's like sandy for sure. But during the motos, I mean, there's some like hard pack sections of the track where, you know, you're running a MX-12 paddle tire or whatever you have on your bike, and you're kind of like, whoa, I could almost use like a hard pack tire here. But for the most part, I think each year they're dumping more sand, you know, than the following year. So it seems like it's getting a little bit softer. But for me, like I said, I grew up just in straight up Florida, like beach sand. So I don't necessarily consider it as sandy. But I think if you're a Florida guy, you're definitely going to feel pretty comfortable out there compared to maybe Redbud or, you know, some of the other nationals you'll ride. So,
yeah, even on TV, you can see there's a lot of square edge bumps too, like going in the corners and stuff. Which, I mean, we get braking bump stuff down here, but it seemed pretty worse up there.
Yeah, yep, for sure. I mean, another thing that was kind of interesting about it, as far as like the track prep goes, that people don't really like see when you watch is you know, you show up, like last year, for example, it's like a highway in practice. So you get out there and, like, you know, everyone knows, like, the first practice is so crucial there, because it's like that's when you put your time in. So, you know, last year I didn't know the track or anything, but I came out and I think I qualified like top 15 last year too. But, you know, you get out there and you just go wide open pretty much for, you know, a lap on a national track you never even rode. But because of how smooth it is, you can get a good time in. This year was quite different, though, because I was in the A practice with like the factory guys or whatever. So we had a track that was pretty rough, actually, and they did the prep for the track differently this year. They actually tilled it. Mm-hmm. So, you know, sand, if you could imagine, like a sand track tilled, it gets really, really brutal and broken down. So it definitely had some kickers that I probably still can feel in my back.
Yeah, I heard them say that they wanted it to be like the old Southwick of like the 70s and 80s, where it's just brutal. So they prepped it to be nice and rough for you.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I think some of the old Southwick rippers, like Dowdy and Johnson, I think they're like doing the prep on it now or something, from what I heard. So that does not surprise me.
Yeah, for sure. So, hey, obviously, a ton of dudes ride and train down here in Florida. So are you training with anyone over summer, getting prepped for those nationals, or are you kind of just doing it on your own?
You know, I try to. There's a lot of guys. Like I said, it is kind of neat. Florida is definitely a hotbed as far as, you know, places to train. But, you know, there's guys like Lorenzo Licurcio and like RJ Hampshire and some of those guys that I've been friends with for a while. And, you know, anytime I get the chance to go and train with them, it's obviously super beneficial for me. But to be honest, it's really just been me riding by myself a lot. You know, I just try and do it when I can. During the, like, leading up to the nationals, I would try and be on the bike like 3 days a week, and it was kind of just floating around from local track to local track, just public places. And it's tough, because a lot of the times I would try and talk to some of the track owners and be like, look, can I come when, like, you know, the track is rough and isn't groomed, and they never really can, because obviously that's not their target audience. You know, they're trying to get it all nice and prepped for like the vet riders or whatever, which I totally understand, but, you know, it's just kind of, it's really, really difficult. So for me to prepare myself, I'd actually ride in the woods more than anything. I found a few hair scramble loops kind of near my house. So I would just go and ride there during the week, and, you know, it's never groomed. So that was kind of my little trick I found to prepare for rough tracks.
Is that Hamilton?
Yep. Hamilton's
Yeah.
one of them.
I've been
There's
there
a
a
few
bunch.
spots actually. Yeah, Hamilton. You know them. That place gets pretty
It's
brutal. It's
gnarly.
I always joke with people. I'm like, man, there's Southwick and then there's Hamilton. You know, there's a few places that are like that. But you go out there and I just do like three laps in the middle of the summer and right in the middle of the day and it's just so hot and that's a good way to get prepared for sure.
Yeah, I went to UCF for a couple of weeks. Didn't last very long, but so I rode Hamilton a couple of times, and it was in the middle of the summer as well, and it taxes you for sure.
Oh, it really does. Well, you remember then, you're going through those tight little tree sections and you're just hitting whooped out single trail for so long. It's pretty wild. It definitely is hard for a motocross guy like me, but I think it's a really good cross training for sure.
Yeah, I would definitely agree. But hey, since you spent some time in the woods, have you ever? I race FTR, Ford Trail Riders, so I was wondering if you ever thought about racing one of those races, a hair scramble.
It's funny you mentioned that. I talk about doing it like every year, and I don't know if like Barry McCarty or some of the there's a vet guy that I'm friends with, Barry. He's super gnarly in the woods, and I grew up with him, and he's always trying to get me to go do one, and I really need to. It's I did one actually when I was little on like an 85 forever ago, but I know so many people that do it, and like I said, I'll be honest, I ride the woods more than I ride motocross tracks. Really, I mean, I'm on a motocross track on the weekend racing, but really during the week, I'm really just riding like woods loops. So, I probably will look into that. I might have to hit a trail or two soon and then go race an FTR or something like that. That'd be fun.
Yeah, for sure. It'd be awesome to have you out there. But hey, I mentioned you're from DeLand. So growing up, were you riding with like Starling and Gerke and those guys?
Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. So Justin, Starling, he's my neighbor. And then, Matt and Kyle Gerke, they were like a huge role models for me. I mean, really Justin and Kyle and Matt, I mean, those were like the guys I looked up to. Still to this day too. Like I'm still really close with all of them. And Justin obviously is went on and done good things in Supercross and Motocross and Matt was a real big, idol to me. So just from being a little guy, it's been really cool to grow up with them and the Gerke family. They're just really awesome and they've always treated me well. So I've spent many laps on their motocross track and then so yeah, I mean we definitely have it's a tight-knit group, like as far as the land goes, there's not a whole lot of people that are really racing. I would say really just like me and Starling and Hannah Hodges and a couple others, but not many motocrossers for sure, but I think it's still cool. I think we all are friends to this day, and I definitely had a lot of people to kind of learn motocross from as far as DeLand goes. So yeah, it's been nice.
It's funny you mentioned Hodges because I was just thinking that because you were talking about the Gerkes and Starling. I was like, I know there's another person that's really fast from there, and Hannah is so fast. Do you ride with her much, and how does she compare to you guys?
Yeah, no, for sure. Hannah's really quick. We actually just rode together at my parents' place, I think last week. So I'm still really tight with her, and yeah, she does good. I try and take her in the woods every now and again too, because for us, like being from Florida, everyone knows, like everyone's training in Florida. But the problem is a lot of those tracks that you see, like Stewart's and Baggett's and all those are all private. So I've been to both of them. I've been out to Stewart's and Baggett's and stuff, but it's kind of hard to get, invited out there or, sometimes they have their training sessions that you're not really allowed to jump in on. So it's really, we just try to ride like private or, like a woods loop or find a piece of property we can go and build a track on just to save money, because you do the public track and you spend your money to go ride. And then to be honest with you're just riding a smooth track that, and there's a million people out there. So Hannah and I, we kind of know all the spots in DeLand, so we have a good little selection to ride from for sure. But yeah, it's just kind of week to week. It's all about just finding, what the weather's doing. It rains pretty much every single day, so finding a sand track is kind of imperative.
Tristan, I think the hardest thing for me that I've ever done is try to get a motocross rider to come race a hair scramble. So, hearing that you guys ride trails is really cool for me. I didn't know that, so that's awesome.
Yeah, no, for sure. Yeah, it's kind of funny. Like I was talking to someone this weekend. I was racing over in Jacksonville, and this guy came up and he's like, "Oh man, where you been riding at or training?" And I was like, Nowhere, really. I mean, don't get me wrong. Like, a good track for me. Like, I like to go to Orlando MX. They're really good people over there, the Diaz family. And we ride there, and we'll switch between, like, PAX tracks, Orlando MX, Hard Rock sometimes. You know, we'll ride a little bit of everything. But, like, the majority of the riding really is just, yeah, doing, like, woods loops. And, you know, that's where the training's at. Because, like, you know, the FTR and all those the off-road stuff, longer duration and, you know, a lot rougher normally. So it's really good, I think, to mix it up and do a little bit of both. But I definitely want to try and race one of these days. That would be kind of like a bucket list deal for me. So
yeah, that, like I said earlier, it'd be awesome for you to do that. But hey, you know, going way back right now, how did you first get your start in motocross? When did you first start riding?
Yeah, that's funny. I guess I was 8 years old, and I think I kind of a lot different than most kids. You know, most of the kids you see now are like factory riders when they're like nine. Mm-hmm. I was definitely not that kid. I think I started riding when I was eight, and I just was begging for a bike, and my dad got me a little 110 for my birthday, and it was kind of just like riding. You know, grew up riding in the woods with him, and we were just like straight up like rednecks. Like we didn't know anything about, like, you know, motocross racing or anything. He had never rode before, and so we were total newbies. But just kind of one thing led to another, and I think I was like 9 or 10, started racing locally a little bit, and I never really was all that great until I got maybe a little bit older and got on big bikes, and I think I started to blossom a little bit more. But yeah, the local Florida scene is a lot different now than it used to be, because when I was little, I just remember racing, like, you know, you go to a local track and there'd be full gates. Yeah. I mean, I grew up racing like 40 man gates, just, you know, at your local mm-hmm. track. And now it's like, you can't even fill, you know, 20 people on a gate. So it was definitely an odd start, but, I wouldn't trade it for anything. I definitely learned how to ride the sand really well. That's for sure.
who are some of like your amateur rivals down here in Florida racing down here?
Yeah. So, I mean, I was in the same age group as like Cincerello. So okay. you'd race Adam, you know, on any, depending on where you were at. I grew up racing Cincerello a lot. And then, you know, there's just a lot of different kids. To this day, I actually still race locally some of the same kids, like Austin Winslow. And, I'd have to think, just a lot of the same kids, though, are still racing. But, I'd say Cincerello was always the kid. Like, we trained over the summer once together, and he was always, like, the hottest amateur, you know, kid on right at the time. And he had so much hype around him. So anytime I could go and ride with him was awesome. But Starling was always racing. But as far as my amateur rival, once you get into the, the nationals and the B class, it was like Forkner and, okay. you know, Lorenzo and those kind of guys were the ones went in. So I was always trying to gun for that spot. But I was more of like a top five guy. I never got onto the podium as far as like the amateur nationals. So for me, it just kind of made sense to move up to the A class and then try and maybe make some money instead of spending all of it, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's not a bad plan. You know, and I like the story how you said, like, your dad just got you a 110. You guys were just out riding wherever you could, you know, in Central Florida, which I think is awesome. You definitely have the two different sides. You know, you have the kid whose dad was raced all his life and all that, and got him started when he was 3 years old with the PW50, which is kind of like how I got started riding. And then someone like you, where, you know, you had a 110 riding out in the woods and just started getting into it. It's really cool to see two
different
sides.
Oh, for sure. Yeah. No, there's definitely a million ways to get to that level. You know, I think nowadays it's kind of an interesting topic, but, you know, you hear so much about these kids starting so young, and it's like, don't get me wrong. Like, I'm sure it would have helped me if I maybe started a little younger or had a little bit more, you know, help when I was younger, as far as like getting into it. We didn't know what we were doing at all, but it's almost like a blessing in disguise, because, you know, here I am, I'm 20 years old now, and, you know, I do it all on my own. You know, it's just I love racing, and I train during the week, and I don't know. It's just a much different upbringing, I guess you could say, but I still love it. Mm-hmm. And I know so many, I couldn't even tell you how many people I grew up racing with that quit racing or that kind of fell out of it and they get burnt out or whatever. So, you know, I've never been to a training facility or anything like that. So I can't really relate, but, it really is a great sport though, for sure. And, I think the way my dad did it with me, it has some advantages for sure.
Mm-hmm. And do we have any plans for some Supercross next year, or are you doing just outdoors pretty much?
No, yeah, Supercross is actually that's what I really want to do. So kind of tough. So I was going to try and do it this year, actually. I did like a Supercross boot camp with RJ Hampshire over at his Supercross track for like a month or two. So leading up to the first rounds of Supercross for him, I was just training out there. It was me, Lorenzo, Lucrecio, and RJ, and Ramler Alves. Mm-hmm. So we'd be out there doing our training and stuff. And the plan was is they were doing their Supercross, so I was going to be training for Arena Cross.
Gotcha.
And I went to my first Arena Cross, and I actually had like a freak deal in practice and ended up getting like knocked out, and I tore my meniscus. Oh. I didn't know at the time, actually. But so I ended up getting banged up pretty good and didn't end up getting to do any Arena Cross. So I missed out on getting my Supercross license. So that's kind of a big goal of mine now, is mm-hmm. to try and set my sights on that. Because as you know, the indoor racing is definitely a lot more doable for a privateer, and and that's what all the sponsors want. So
yeah,
got to try and do that stuff.
It'd be really cool to see you out at Daytona too, you know, home track and all.
Oh man, that's about as home track as it gets. I doubt there's anyone else that has a closer home track than Daytona. I always laugh because when you do like the amateur day, I've done it a few times at Daytona, and I literally just, it's like 20 minutes from my house, literally. So it's just, it's pretty funny. That would be a dream come true. And I think as long as I could get, I think they're doing what the amateur Supercross is now to get your license. Is that what it is?
Yep.
So I guess try and do a few of those and see how it goes, and definitely try and do some Supercrosses. There's a few like GPF in Georgia. I know there's a few different Supercross tracks you can ride, and that would be really cool to be able to start doing that sort of racing. Cause you know, outdoors, it's pretty brutal financially, and it beats up your equipment pretty bad. So it'd be nice to stay indoors a little bit.
What's your opinion on the whole road to Supercross Ricky Carmichael thing? I'm not a big fan of it. I mean, yeah, some guys should probably have to do some kind of qualification to get their license, but you know, like a guy like you said, you qualified top 20 for a national, you've qualified for nationals before. I don't think a guy like you should have to, you know, go and get a license, you know, do the arena crosses or now the amateur Supercrosses, you know?
You know, it's a really like controversial topic, it seems like, because, you know, on one hand, when I was getting ready to do it, I was like, oh man, I totally agree. Like you should have to do it, right? Like, you know, get your feet wet. But then you go to one and you realize it's actually like, it's difficult because, for example, like me, like I know I'm totally like comfortable and safe on a Supercross track, you know, like for example, training out at like RJ Hampshire's and stuff, you know, if you can ride a track like that, like I'm plenty capable of doing Supercross. But there are people I understand that, you know, to kind of like make it a safer environment, they want you to do the arena cross. But what people don't realize is like you're traveling all over the country to go to those arena crosses, and the way to get your points, it was a lot harder than people understand. Like you have to not only like just making the night show, you know, you're talking like tenths of seconds on a track that tight. So you make the night show and then you got to like make your main event to get a point, I think. So it was pretty difficult. And in my eyes, I think if you're making, you know, if you make a 40 man gate at an outdoor national 250 or 450 class, I think you're probably capable of, you know, deciding if you're safe enough to race a Supercross or not. But, you know, especially for some of the guys, you know, you see out there doing the road to Supercross, it's like you're almost overqualified, right? You're like, geez, I think that guy's okay to race Supercross. But, you know, I don't know. I think there's obviously other reasons why they want to do that. Maybe for money. I don't know. Maybe they're trying to, you know, make a living themselves. So they want to make other people do their series. But the amateur Supercrosses, for example, I mean, you're riding a track that is pretty mellow from what I hear. I think that, you know, almost anyone can do it. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that all plays out. At least Arena Cross was definitely realistic for like whoops and stuff. So I don't know. I guess I'm somewhere in the middle. I think it's a good learning experience to race in a stadium and kind of ride that style of track. But nowadays, I guess it's going to be just all through the amateur Supercross. So I guess we'll have to wait and see how it all pans out, right?
Yeah, exactly. And you said it best, you know, at least the Arena Cross, man, that was a challenging track. It was very similar to like a Supercross track where, I mean, like you said, you've raced Daytona that amateur day. The 50 riders are hitting all the jumps, you know, so they're easier than most local motocross tracks. So it's kind of like now it's like, all right, we don't really need this, you know, but I guess you got to do something.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, I think a lot of it too, like from talking to some of the, you know, local pros that are having to do it too, seems like the consensus is like you know, you go to the arena cross races and it's gnarly. I mean, people don't understand. Like, I did a couple of them last year and, you know, you'd go there and practice. And I remember like looking at the whoops and, you know, being like, there's no way. Like, those things are massive. Mm-hmm. And, you know, obviously you got to learn how to skim them. And, you know, it's an important part of Supercross is whoops are everything, obviously. So I think it was definitely beneficial for the people that have done arena cross. But, you know, now I don't really know if it's going to produce a worse Supercross rider by chance, you know, and that could mm-hmm. be something that I would think could be a result of it. You know, if you're not sending them through the arena cross, maybe, you know, when they do get their points, you know, Supercross is going to be a much bigger learning curve for them rather than the kids that have, you know, done their AMSL arena cross series. But I think if they would have done it, maybe in my opinion, if they would have done the AMSL arena cross, but maybe had it a little bit more forgiving as far as getting your points, mm-hmm. like maybe if you just qualify into the night program and finish your, you know, your race and get, you know, get some laps on the track and everything, I think maybe that would be suitable to earn points. And then it'd be a little bit more doable to get your, you know, your license. That would probably have worked out better, but, you know, it's just going to be interesting to see. Yeah. Cause like you said, the little, you know, 50s and 60s are out there jumping the same mm-hmm. stuff as the pro guys. So little interesting. I don't know. We'll see how it all works out.
No, yeah. That's definitely a good point you had there. But yeah. All right, Tristan, man, before I let you go though, who do you want to thank for getting you to all the races and stuff?
Oh man, for sure. My friends and family, just for all the support and, you know, guys like, you know, I got a lot of personal sponsors like Bell Helmets, Scott Goggles, EVS, FXR Gear, CDs, just a lot of people that are behind me, Legend International. You know, like I said, my girlfriend, there's a lot of people that are behind the scenes that do a lot. So just can't thank them enough. And thank you guys for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Oh, yeah, man. Thank you for your time. I appreciate even more. And, you know, I love getting Florida guys on. It's always cool, you know, rooting for your hometown guy. So. Thank you. Thank you again.
Oh, heck yeah. Yeah. Have a good one, man. Take it easy.
You too. Later. Bye.
See you.
I want to talk to you guys about oil, and not just any oil. I'm talking about Blood lubricants. Blood is a manufacturer of advanced technology synthetic lubricants for the racing industry. Jeff Green has been producing high quality synthetic lubricants since 1983 and is constantly pushing the bar for high quality oil. Blood sponsors top privateers like Henry Miller and Tyler Bowers and offers sponsorship programs from the amateur level all the way to the pros. Racing is in their blood. Whether you're ripping up the motocross track, hitting the hills on a side-by-side, or cruising back roads on your street bike, Blood Lubricants has you covered with their 100% synthetic oil, specifically engineered for high-performance machines, and their superior anti-wear technology that optimizes wet clutch performance and keeps your engine clean and reduces varnish. Make sure to check out their website, bloodlubricants.com, that's B-L-U-D, lubricants.com, or buyblood.com, B-U-Y-B-L-U-D.com. All products have a 100% guarantee, and be sure to use the promo code WHISKEY to receive the 25% off all products. Again, that's the promo code WHISKEY for 25% off all products. All right, back to the show. All right, on the line with me right now, rider out of New York, Max Gomez. What's going on, man?
Hey, Kurt, how's everything? Just on my way to school, actually, right now. But other than that, things have been going well.
Yeah, man, that sounds awesome, man. Same here. You know, can't complain. You know, so I first heard your story through a mutual friend, Kyle Blank. And, you know, I thought it was a cool story. So I really, really wanted to get you on this show. So, you know, to start things off, tell us a little bit about yourself.
A pretty average kid growing up. You know, I played a bunch of sports and did the baseball, the football, the soccer, all that other stuff. And it wasn't until I was, I got my first real dirt bike, I guess you could say, when I was 4 or 5 for my birthday. And, you know, no other sport that I played really gave me that, you know, that fire quite like the dirt bike. So, that was one thing that I kind of always came back to, and it wasn't until I was about maybe 10 or 11 that I started to race and compete a little bit. And then from there, you know, by the time I turned 16, we started, you know, me, my dad, and my brother, we all started traveling around and racing and you know, all over the East Coast and even like Michigan and You know, it kind of grew a little bit more each year, and it turned out to be, you know, for me growing up, I couldn't ask for a better childhood. I mean, I got to travel every weekend with my family, and you know, and then for me, anytime I'm on the bike is a great time. So, you know, it was just one of those things that every weekend I looked forward to it, and I always had that fire to be on the bike, and it was just, to this day, it's just something that I haven't found anything yet that could kind of replace it. So, you know, I just keep going, and that's how it's been.
Yeah, you know, I couldn't agree more about, you know, that fire when you ride your dirt bike. I think that's why so many people do it, and so many people love the sport so much, man. It's just that passion. There's really no feeling than being, you know, jumping in the air, ripping through some trees on your motorcycle.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, you know, it's like anything else. It's got its positives and negatives. You know, I have a short list of all the injuries that I've kind of succumbed to over the years, but you know, I wouldn't change it or trade it for anything. It's just, you know, it's in my blood, and it's something that I've loved to do since basically I could even walk.
Yeah, and you know, you mentioned injuries. We all deal with it, but you know, unfortunately for you, was it probably 2012 or 13? You had a big one, and unfortunately, you had to, you know, amputate your leg, your lower leg. Talk about that a little bit.
Yeah, so it was 2012. I was a senior in high school at the time, and you know, for me, it was just another weekend. It was a bigger race than some of the other ones that I had done before it, but you know, I treated it like it was any other race, and it was out in Pennsylvania at a pro national course, and I think it was a Saturday. It was probably about four races into the day. I was having a great day, and I was doing really well. And, you know, I just coming up to one of the jumps, they watered the face of the jump a little bit just to keep some of the dust down. And I lost a little bit of traction coming up, and, you know, I started to slide a little bit, and I knew I wasn't going to make it all the way over the jump. So I just kind of hammered the throttle and just gave it everything it had in hopes that I would, you know, go as far as I could go. And, you know, I kind of landed right at the top of the jump. It was a jump like up a hill. So I kind of landed right on the top of the jump and just kind of framed it with the bike, and it ejected me off. And then instead of going forward, you know, on the course, I kind of went off to the left, and it was like a 30-foot drop. And you know, luckily I landed on my feet. If I would have landed on, you know, my head or my neck, things could have been a lot worse. But you know, I landed on my feet, and or my right foot, I should say, and just the impact, you know, it basically just exploded, you know, my foot, to put it, you know, bluntly, from the inside out. And so there was, you know, bones and arteries, and it looked fine from the outside, which is why it was kind of deceiving. You know, eventually when I took my boot off, we're looking at it and it's like, wow, it's not even really swollen. Like, it, you know, it was kind of, I just thought maybe, all right, it's a sprained ankle. I mean, it was killing me, but I'm like, all right, you know, that's not something that you think of, that you know, down the line, who would have known that this would be me losing my leg. So I kind of just treated it as a sprained ankle. And, you know, within a couple hours, the pain just was, you know, getting worse and worse. And then eventually I was like, nah, there's no way. So we just decided we were going to go to the hospital. And then it went from a sprained ankle to a broken ankle to a couple hours later, we can't find a pulse in, you know, in the foot. To a couple hours later, losing movement in my toes, and they started turning blue. And then from there, it went, all right, well, this, you know, you might lose your foot. And, you know, so things happened quickly within, you know, this all happened within like a day. And I was in the hospital for 3 weeks. So a lot of stuff happened in that first day. And, you know, they tried a bunch of stuff over the course of the 3 weeks. I had five surgeries, and you know, it kind of just went from bad to worse, and every time I come out of a surgery, you know, I was hopeful things were going to kind of look on the bright side, but, you know, I just kept getting hit with more bad news. So ultimately we, you know, in my eyes, I see it kind of as I had no choice, because if I would have kept my foot, you know, it had gangrene already, and I would have, you know, it would have just been a disaster. So I was like, you know what, amputated, you know, my family and me, we decided that we were just going to, you know, amputate it and take that path and, you know, deal with it from there.
Yeah, man, that just sounds brutal. And, you know, I'm sure it was terrifying, you know, and like you said, you're always hoping for that good news and it never really came. But man, you had quite the recovery though. I heard 6 months before you got back on a bike. That's insane.
Yeah, we, so I guess, you know, in comparison to some of my other injuries, 6 months is a while, but most people would say, like, all right, yeah, you know, you lost your foot. The fact that you even got back on the bike is pretty, you know, pretty crazy in itself. But for me, it was just, you know, it was only a matter of time. I knew, you know, originally I was like, all right, there's no way I'm going to be able to ride again. You know, just from my, you know, my parents' perspective and that side of it. And then also I'm like, how can I ride? I don't even have a foot. It was more than just, you know, I didn't want to ride. It was I don't know how I'm going to be able to. So over the course of, you know, those 6 months was kind of like sitting down, you know, at the drawing board with my dad and figuring out, all right, what are we going to be able to do? And so, you know, I kind of, the first day back on the bike was, you know, it was cool, you know, for me to be able to say I got back on the bike, but I was by no means that I feel comfortable, and I knew we had a lot of work to do if I was going to be, you know, back to how I was prior to the accident. But yeah, the 6 months I spent a lot of time in rehab, and you know, what a lot of people don't realize is that, you know, Your leg is amputated, and your body, and your, more specifically that leg, it goes through a lot of trauma. Mm-hmm. So its swelling is immense, and they don't want to give you a leg right away because, you know, the leg's kind of shrinking over the course of, you know, primarily a couple months, the leg shrinks quite a bit. So you don't just get out of the hospital and get a leg. It takes, you know, a couple months before you even can walk, you know, so for me, it was I took things kind of step by step, and my biggest thing coming out of the hospital was, you know, first I was in a wheelchair, and I'm like, all right, I want to get rid of this wheelchair. I want to get on some crutches. I got on the crutches. Then my next thing was, all right, I want to start walking. And, you know, a couple months later, I got the leg. I started walking. I'm like, all right, I want to start running and getting a little more comfortable. Then, you know, once I was able to do that, then came, all right, how am I going to be able to get back on my bike? Mm-hmm. And then from there, you know, between me and my dad, and he's, you know, he's always supported me with everything. So I wouldn't have been able to do any of this stuff without him. But he's kind of the mastermind behind all the changes and stuff that we had to do to the bike. And he was able to rig up some cool stuff. And now the setup that I have now on my bike is exceptional, and you know, I feel more comfortable now than I ever have, so I would say, you know, it all worked out for the best.
Yeah, I wanted to ask, like, how hard was it to, you know, like, adjust to riding with the prosthetic? I couldn't imagine, you know, not being able to feel the pegs and all that.
Yeah, so that was probably for me, you know, like I said, the first time back on the bike was cool, and you know, it's one thing, you know, when you have an injury and you bounce back, and you know, you're obviously happy to be back, you know, doing what you love. But at the same time, for me, this was more of a permanent injury where it's not like, you know, I broke my wrist and it's like a couple months later it's healed and I'm back to normal. Like, this was like a whole new stepping stone, you know. So for me, losing, you know, my leg, and then my leg, I knew, was going to be gone forever. So not only was I making a recovery from the injury, but I had to adjust to a whole new life. So it was a lot thrown at me at once. So, you know, my first time back on the bike was kind of took a little wind out of my sails, because I was like, it was so, you know, I was just so uncomfortable And I knew there was going to be so much work to do that I was like, all right, like, are we really going to do this? Or should I just kind of ride it and say I got back on and then, you know, drop it? But, you know, I've always been the type of kid that's, you know, just determined. And I was like, you know what, I'm going to, you know, whatever, I'm not going to give up. And I'm just going to try my best to get as comfortable as I can on the bike. There's got to be a, you know, a solution. And so I remember, you know, the first day on the bike, I had the prosthetic and I had my motocross boot and I put it over the foot. So my leg was really heavy. And you know, while I was riding, I felt the weight of it and I just felt really off balance. So I knew that wasn't going to work. So what we did was I spoke to there was a guy that I heard about that his name is Mike Schultz, that he created his own motocross foot, or he uses it for, you know, snowboarding. It's just like an active foot, but himself, and he created this foot. So my dad reached out to him and he was like, yeah, I'd love to get you set up. So I, you know, a couple weeks later, the foot came in the mail. I popped it on and I gave it a shot. We went back to the track and it was night and day. It was just so much more comfortable, more lightweight. And it gave me that feel that, you know, and it just made things a hell of a lot easier on my end. So then that was a big milestone for us. And then after that, we had to figure out a way to get, because on a normal dirt bike, the back brake is by the right foot. Mm-hmm. So that wasn't going to work because I didn't have, obviously, control of my right foot. So we had to take the brake pedal off of the foot, the foot peg, and we put it up by the handlebar. So it was basically almost like if I was riding a bicycle. So I have my back brake lever and my front brake lever. And then, you know, that was kind of the setup that I ran for a while. I mean, I still run it now, but we, you know, we tweaked a couple things to make it a little better and a little more durable. And then, you know, that was really from there. That was one of that was probably the biggest thing that made it so that I can be the most comfortable on the bike. And, you know, from there, that's the setup that we've been running for, you know, I think four or five years now. And, yeah, it's just been, you know, I don't think I could possibly feel any more comfortable. Anytime I'm on the bike, I forget I even have this disability. It's second nature now. And, you know, I think me and my dad and the whole, you know, this guy that made Mike Schultz that made the foot, I think, you know, all that coming together is really what made it possible for me.
Yeah, man, that's awesome to hear. It's cool that, you know, you had to just adapt some things on your bike. And man, I couldn't imagine, like I ride mountain bikes almost every day and I still get the whole brakes, you know, messed up because like the front brake is where the clutch is normally on a dirt bike. So I couldn't imagine having to adapt. I think I read that you were in the C class when this happened, correct?
Yeah, so that first year in 2013, I got back, you know, I did a couple races and I raced the C class a little bit. And then I got invited to go to the X Games for, the amputee race. And so that was pretty cool. And that whole year we did a lot of traveling and I was riding in a lot of different places and cause it was kind of, you know, fresh and new and, you know, it was a good way to keep my mind off of everything else. So I was like, you know what, I'm going to ride as much as I can and have as much fun as I can. So that was 2013. And then in 2014, I moved up to the B class and I rode the B class for 2 years and I did pretty well in that. And then, I think 2016, I moved up to the A class. And then since then I've just been racing the A class and we hit a couple big races. I was just out in Michigan, Labor Day weekend. And so between me and my brother, I mean, he's kind of carrying the torch now. He went to Loretta Lynn's this year and he's you know, he's 18, so he's kind of in more in that you know, that age zone where there's less responsibilities and stuff. So now, you know, now I got work and school, so I kind of just go when I can. And but yeah, I mean, I still have goals in the sport. I want to eventually get my pro card and be one of the, you know, one of the few, or if not the only, amputees to qualify for a pro national, which would be, but yeah, just, you know, I just trying to stay fit and stay healthy. And I know, you know, motocross is not something that I'm going to do for the rest of my life, but, you know, it's just something that I love doing and I always look forward to doing. So I kind of just, you know, no matter what I do in life, I always kind of come back to the bike. And it's just always been like that.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. You know, like, it's, you know, motocross, I think about it every single day of my life. And, you know, it's hard to just not think about it. I couldn't imagine, you know, not being able to, you know, ride anymore or anything like that. You know, one of the main things I wanted to ask you was how long did it take you to get back up to speed? But you just said it. I didn't realize you started racing, you know, pretty much within a year. I just thought you were riding. So that's awesome that, you know, it wasn't even like a huge setback, you know, with your speed, because you went straight from C to B to A pretty quickly after.
Yeah, basically there was the first real race that I did was they don't have it anymore, but it was like an amputee race, and it was at another track out in Michigan. And so that was kind of the first race that I did back, like, with, you know, having one leg. And it was all the amputees, and it was much bigger than kind of over the years it kind of died out. But that first year in 2013, it was pretty big. And there was a, you know, there was only a handful of amputees, but there were some quick guys. And I was kind of training that whole year for that one race. And it was May of 2013. And so I raced that race, and I actually ended up winning, which was
cool.
And then, you know, once I won that was kind of I didn't realize it at the time, but that was a qualifier to go to the X Games. So then I got the invite to go to the X Games, and I got fourth in the X Games. And then unfortunately they kind of stopped doing that one too. So, you know, once they ended that, I was like, you know what, I'm just going to race with the, you know, the normal able body guys. And, you know, to me, racing's racing, whether I'm racing amputees or I'm racing, you know, guys with all their limbs. You know, I just like banging bars and, you know, having a good battle. So for me, I was like, I'm going to go to the B class, I'll race there. And then I knew ultimately I wanted to be an A rider, and, you know, but that came along, and now that's just kind of what I've been doing.
Yeah, man, that's, you know, that's awesome to hear that. You know, I think, you know, us motocross riders are obviously a little hard-headed, you know, whenever we get hurt, we kind of just want to get right back on that bike. And I think, you know, in any other sport, if something happened like your injury, people would definitely take a step back for at least for a couple of years, you know, but, you know, not as dirt bike riders.
Yeah. Yeah. I would definitely agree. And I mean, even, I think even in my case, maybe I went a little too quick, because, you know, just us being moto guys, like, we just, you know, like you said, we're hard-headed, and we just, the only thing, you know, when you're injured, the only thing you want to do is get back on the bike. No matter what anybody tells you, that's, you know, there's nothing that's going to fill that void like getting back on the bike. So, you know, I was young, I was 18, and I was just like, all I want to do is ride. And, mm-hmm. you know, if I would have kind of looked back on it, I probably would have done rehab for, you know, a little longer, made myself a little stronger. But, you know, in the end, it all kind of worked out. And, you know, I don't regret any of the choices that I made. So, it's been a great journey thus far, and I'm hoping to make more memories in the future.
Yeah, man, that's awesome. And, you know, I really hope to see you at a national here soon. Before I let you go, though, who do you want to thank for, you know, helping you out through everything?
What'd you say?
Who do you want to thank for helping you out through everything?
Oh, so yeah, I primarily my dad, my dad Alex, my brother Duke. I want to thank Mike Schultz at BioDapt for making the foot. I got a couple sponsors: Fly Racing, Wheel Sports Center. The guys over there, Frankie, he takes care of me with parts and fixing the bike up. And then Recluse Clutch, and there's a couple other guys out there that, you know, if I see Perino at Retro Fitness has been a big help for me as well. But yeah, just looking forward to the future and hoping to make, you know, more memories with these guys and just keep racing and getting better.
All right, man. Sounds awesome. Thank you again, and you have a great day.
Yeah, thanks, Kurt. I appreciate it. Hopefully I'll see you soon, man.
Yeah, sounds good. See ya.
Well, I don't need to lie no more. Nowadays, all I do is shine, take a breath and ease my mind. She don't cry no more. She tell me that I get her high, cause the angel's supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine, I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door. Yeah, okay, you gotta jump in to swim. Well, the light was dim and this life was sin. Now every day I wake up and breathe. I don't have it all, but that's alright with me. Take it nice and easy, took a flight to see me. Send you back home with a light that's beaming. The whole team about to figure it out. We ice cold, that's what winning we're about. And sometimes, I wish I took a simpler route. Instead of having demons that's as big as my house. Have a ball with a dribble and bounce. Cause the party ain't over till they kicking me out. Yeah, isn't it funny? We can make a lot of money, buy a lot of things just to feel a lot of ugly. I was yay high and muddy, looking for what was looking for me. But I don't need to lie no more. Nowadays all I do is shine, take a breath and ease my mind. She don't cry no more. She tell me that I get her high, cause the angel's supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine, I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door. Yeah, they ask me what I'm smiling for. Well, because I've never been this high before. It's like I never felt alive before. I'd rather have me peace of mind than war. You see me and you, we ain't that different. I struck the fuck out and then I came back swinging. Take my time to finish, mind my business. A life ain't a life till you live it. I was digging me a hole, big enough to bury my soul. Weight of the world, I gotta carry my own. With these arms, I can carry you home. I'm right here when you're scared and alone, and I ain't never in a hurry. You don't ever gotta worry, even when it's 7:30 and the time is running low. When your heart get cold, see what's behind all them unturned stones. And I'm a pro when it come to my job, but really I'm just trying to start believing in God. Now when it gets hard, I don't panic, I don't sound the alarm. Because I don't need to lie no more. Nowadays all I do is shine, take a breath and ease my mind. She don't cry no more. She tell me that I get her high, cause the angel's supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine, I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door. I don't need to lie no more. Nowadays all I do is shine, take a breath and ease my mind. She don't cry no more. She tell me that I get her high, cause the angel's supposed to fly. I ain't asking why no more. Oh no, I take it if it's mine, I don't stay inside the lines. It ain't 2009 no more. Yeah, I know what's behind that door.